LinkedIn stock surges.
And some are wondering if we're entering another tech bubble.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for checking out the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast for Marketplace.org. Happy Friday, Jeremy. It's
happy
May 20th.
Happy Friday, yeah. Steve. And happy Friday for Barnes & Noble. It's got a bidder. We'll have that story.
Royal Dutch Shell is going to build a bigger boat.
And instead of seeing the Oprah show, one man beats himself up and goes to jail.
Oh, the incredible story coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
The stock price of the social networking site LinkedIn sits this morning at a value much higher than its initial public offering, more than 100% higher. And in just the last day or so, former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers told an audience in Shanghai that this could be indicative of another tech bubble forming.
Well, Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large at CBS MoneyWatch. She's with us from New York, as she is every Friday, and she's here with some reaction to that. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
You've got the former Treasury Secretary now talking about a possible bubble forming. What's making him believe that?
Well, I think that there's just this general resumption of risk-taking going on, and we saw that with the LinkedIn IPO yesterday. Here's a company that made, you know, profits of about $15 million last year, and it's worth $9 billion. I don't think any sane investor would put that bet down, and yet tons of them did yesterday, and that may show somewhat of a willing sense of suspension of belief in terms of what companies really can do.
Well, does that mean the stock price is going to go down? Is that what you're predicting?
Well, I don't know if I would predict that, but I'll tell you what I would say. We did some analysis at MoneyWatch.com, and a bunch of studies have showed that the average IPO has returned just about one-third as much as the S&P 500 index, and yet people keep chasing them. And I think that does show that investors really act in irrational ways sometimes. But remember, may not be irrational for a long enough time, so you know, you don't want to take a bet either way.
Just about 10 seconds, Jill. What does it say about a Facebook or Twitter IPO down the pike?
Well, I don't know. Facebook is supposedly worth somewhere between $70 and $100 billion on the secondary market right now, so this is going to be massive. Twitter, not probably about the same size as LinkedIn, but I'll tell you, this Facebook thing is going to be a gorilla when it hits the market, and everybody's going to want in on the action.
Jill Schlesinger in New York. Jill, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, Steve, Jill, let's get another perspective on this from Chris Lowe, chief economist with FTN Financial. He's also with us from New York. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So what do you think, Chris? Are we entering another tech bubble?
Well, I have to say, you know, trading action like that certainly does feel bubbly. But if it is a tech bubble, it's a little bit different this time. It's not anything hardware and software. It's social media-related stocks that people are really interested in.
Well, one of the things that helped fuel that bubble was cheap money 15 years ago. But money is cheap again. Do you think we're entering another phase of sort of irrational exuberance?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it. The Fed, a lot of what the Fed is doing by providing liquidity is trying to force banks to take more risk. But in the process, they're forcing investors to take more risk, too. And it's not just LinkedIn stock that's up a ton this year. It's commodities as well. And all of it is people just trying to find yield.
Trying to find a better return. Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial, thanks so much.
Thank you.
The federal government has a new message for health insurers. Think long and hard before trying to raise premiums more than 10%. But insurance companies say a new rule announced by the Department of Health and Human Services will drive them to drop coverage in some areas. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
One of the big promises of healthcare reform is that everyone in the U.S. can get coverage, regardless of pre-existing conditions. Ethan Rome is with Healthcare for America Now. He says insurers anticipate paying for all those pre-existing conditions.
And they've been jacking up rates at double-digit levels.
Starting this fall, if insurance companies want double-digit increases, they'll need permission to do it on individual or small group plans. Peter Pitts is with the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest.
Certain insurance companies will decide not to do business in certain states and areas where they simply can't get the rates they need to stay in business.
Christopher Bowe is a healthcare analyst with Informa.
My guess is that they'll be flexible and look for ways to change their business model to stay profitable and become more efficient.
He says insurers have shown flexibility. The health insurance industry is on its way to a third year of record profits. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
The nation's biggest bookstore chain may have a new owner soon. Barnes & Noble has a $1 billion offer on the table from Liberty Media. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman joins us now to talk about it. Hi, Mitchell.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, first, tell us what we know about this offer.
Well, it's a friendly offer from media mogul John Malone's Liberty Media, and as you said, it's for just over $1 billion. Barnes & Noble's got 2,000 stores nationwide, and it has outlived its biggest rival, Borders, which went belly up a few months ago.
And Borders went belly up thanks in no small part, Mitchell, to the rise of e-books. Why would an old-school brick-and-mortar company like Barnes & Noble be attractive to Liberty Media?
Well, the key to understanding this is ebooks. It's the Nook. That's Barnes & Noble's electronic book reader, and it is doing well. Ebook sales are up 400% in just the last 2 years. Rupert Goodwin's edits technology website ZDNet in London.
Increasingly, ebooks are seen as just another way to distribute content within companies who previously have been concentrating on electronic media like the web or television and radio.
And so Liberty may be betting on this grand convergence of all things that begin with an E. Barnes & Noble stores bring in shoppers. They can then be hyped on Liberty's e-commerce sites, including QVC Home Shopping Channel and Expedia for travel and Gifts.com for tchotchkes. And then the Nook becomes a way to deliver media and ads to customers, along, of course, with books, in this case, paperless books.
Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman. Thanks, Mitchell.
You're welcome.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective. Oil giant Royal Dutch Shell said today it's going to begin building a giant ocean vessel designed to liquefy natural gas at sea. Now, this vessel is going to be called the Prelude, and it could dramatically increase the supply of offshore natural gas. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So what more do we know about this big, big ship?
Well, we know, as you say, that it is going to be big, 1,600 feet long at least, six times heavier than the biggest aircraft carrier, and with a price tag to match, somewhere between $10 and $12 billion. As you say, it will liquefy natural gas at sea, so you don't have to pipe it hundreds of miles to the shore to be liquefied. Here's Nick McGregor of brokers Redmayne Bentley.
Transferring natural gas from offshore oil sites onshore to liquefied adds to the price. The idea here is that this will save that money and bring a lot of marginal natural gas projects into the investment horizons of the oil majors.
The plan is to have this huge vessel operating off the coast of Australia, supplying the fast-growing Asian market within 5 years.
$10 billion is what we're talking about here, Stephen. That's a big investment. How risky is this?
Well, the risk is that shale gas will prove more popular. Extracting gas from shale is cheaper than importing LNG. Shale gas has virtually wiped out LNG demand in the US. Now, if China develops its shale reserves, that could be a blow. But Shell clearly believes that overall demand for natural gas is growing so fast, there'll be more than enough room for LNG.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Word today that Tokyo Electric Power Company, TEPCO, reported a $15 billion loss in its last fiscal year. That's Japan's biggest ever loss outside of the financial sector.
Now, TEPCO's president also announced he is stepping down because of the mess that is the Fukushima nuclear plant, a disaster that has a lot of countries thinking twice about nuclear power, but not Russia. Russia is pushing ahead with expansion plans. Peter Van Dyke reports.
The Kremlin loves nuclear energy, and it wants to make money out of it. These days, President Dmitry Medvedev says in a video on his blog, nuclear power is the most profitable way to make electricity. And the safest way, he adds, if the rules are followed. Russia aims for its nuclear sector to be a top export earner behind gas and oil. The state nuclear company, Rosatom, is now building 5 reactors abroad and says it has orders for 30 more. But Medvedev's pitch shows that the sales are about politics, too.
Russia traditionally has tended to use commerce as a way of exerting its political influence around the world. So my guess is that the government, even now, would be prepared to take a bit of a cut on the profitability of these projects in order to spread its influence.
Derek Weaving is with Renaissance Capital Investment Bank in Moscow. He says Russian reactors are cheaper.
The technology that they sell is by and large less sophisticated. It doesn't necessarily mean it's less safe, but I think it would be a long time yet before Western governments have the confidence to give these contracts to Rosatom on its own.
To overcome safety concerns in the West, Rosatom will have to team up with companies like Westinghouse and Francis Areva. Russian environmentalists like Vladimir Slivyak of Eco Defense say the West is right not to trust Russia's safety claims.
This is why we're worrying about places like Belene in Bulgaria, in Akuyu in Turkey, in Medzamor in Armenia, because those places are with really high risk of earthquakes.
Slivyak is confident Bulgaria and Turkey will rethink their deals with Russia. Weaving disagrees. He says governments struggling to cut carbon emissions have little choice but to go nuclear. In Moscow, I'm Peter Van Dyke for Marketplace.
London will host the Summer Olympics next year, and a huge event there will be the 100-meter men's sprint final.
Organizers have already received a million requests for these tickets, Jeremy, but those in the UK and Europe hoping to see that event live in person at the stadium, well, they're likely to be disappointed, as the BBC's Rebecca Singer tells us.
It's all about the opportunity to see Jamaican champion Usain Bolt. But the stadium holds just 80,000, and only half that number will be made available to the public. The other half has been allocated to sponsors, VIPs, media and international fans. Gordon Lott is from Lloyds Banking Group, one of the sponsors of London 2012. He says it's a great event to host their corporate clients, but most tickets will be given to the bank's customers.
We are already giving our customers the chance to win tickets, and we will be continuing to do so right through to 2012.
Demand for tickets across all events has been huge, with 20 million ticket applications in total. Concern is that other high-profile events, like swimming and track cycling, will be similarly oversubscribed, and they take place in even smaller venues. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
To New York City now, Steve, where a famous landmark is slated to be closed down due to budget cuts.
Mm.
I am not talking about the Statue of Liberty. That will remain
open.
That
would be awful. Wow.
I'm talking about the Tribeca Firehouse that was used in the 1980s classic film Ghostbusters.
I remember that place.
It is one of 20 fire companies expected to be closed down to save the city $55 million. So if you do have a ghost problem going forward, I suggest that you just call Mayor Bloomberg directly.
Who are you going to call?
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Thousands of retailers and developers and lenders are meeting in Vegas this weekend for a retail real estate convention. Now, during the recession, shoppers abandoned malls for online deals and discount shops. But now the trend is reversing, as Marketplace's Janet Babin tells us.
The International Council of Shopping Centers says people are spending more at the mall, 3% more than last year. Ben Fox is a retail real estate broker with Massey Knackel Realty Services. He says the hottest topic at the shopping center conference this year will be how many people actually show up.
2 years ago, you could roll a bowling ball down the central hall.
Attendance has rebounded, but still isn't back to pre-recession levels. And Fox says that pretty much sums up the state of retail leasing. His deals are up, but he admits that internet shopping has stolen some of the mall's luster.
It accounts for a growing number of sales, but at the end of the day, people enjoy the socialization of going to the mall.
Fox says retailers, though, have actually turned to the internet, too, using exclusive online deals and mobile coupon apps to attract in-store shoppers. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Well, Steve, I don't know about you, but I have been watching NBA nonstop.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going for the Celtics.
Yeah.
Then they lost.
Yeah.
Then I was going for the Memphis Grizzlies, yeah. And then they lost.
You're the kiss of death,
aren't you? I am.
Yeah.
And now I want the Bulls to win just so that somebody can... can crush those who
Why
crush
the
this,
Bulls?
My poor
come
Celtics.
On, that's my, that's
anyway.
Close to my hometown,
no, no,
Jeremy.
I want
gosh.
The Bulls. To, yeah, I know, exactly.
That's all right. Right. You've cursed them now.
Well, there is an interesting angle here in these NBA playoffs. Dallas and Oklahoma City are two of the teams playing right now. Oklahoma City won last night, tying up the series to a game apiece so far. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the ages of the star players on each team, it's not a tie at all. The Thunder is very young, and the Mavs are, let's just say, more experienced.
Don't call them old. Come
and,
on.
And more expensive. Larry Kuhn blogs about the NBA for ESPN.com, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Morning.
Give us a sense of the range of salaries we're talking about when you think about the lowest to the highest.
The minimum salary in the NBA is about $500,000. That's for a rookie on a minimum salary contract. The average salary is around $6 million. The highest salaries are well over $20 million. Kobe Bryant, I think, is the highest salary in the league right now, and he's at about $24
million. And is it typically the older players that are making those high salaries and the younger ones that are making the low salaries?
Yeah, you have to build up over several years to get a salary that's going to be that high.
Let's just look at two of the teams that are playing right now in the playoffs, the Dallas Mavericks and the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Mavs are the oldest team in the NBA. The Thunder are the youngest team in the playoffs. What's the salary difference for the stars on those teams?
It's pretty huge. When you have older players, especially older superstars, you're paying a lot of money for them. The Oklahoma City Thunder are one of the younger teams in the league. They're right at about the salary cap. They're being well managed. And as their players start to get older, they're going to have to start spending a lot of money in order to keep those guys.
But both of these teams have made it to the playoffs. Are you getting what you pay for here? What's the difference in performance?
At this point, not much, since they're playing each other. We'll see who wins out and makes the finals. But you only get to keep young guys cheaply for so long. There's a controlled salary structure for high draft picks in their first few years in the league. After that, they start to make a lot of money.
So how do the team managers figure out who to pick? I mean, if you're looking at a LeBron James, a young guy, or a Dirk Nowitzki, who is an older guy, how do you decide where to spend your money?
You obviously want the young guys who are going to become great players. There's not a lot of those guys to go around. You have to get lucky and get the right pick in the draft in the right year in order to land a guy like that.
Who are you rooting for in this series right now?
I like everybody. I'm paid right now to be impartial.
Larry Kuhn, who writes about the NBA for ESPN.com, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And finally, Jeremy, Robert Spearing and his wife traveled to Chicago from Ontario, Canada, to see the spectacular Oprah Winfrey star-studded finale, right? That big, all the stars were there. You had Aretha Franklin.
At the United Center, right?
Usher.
And they had to move a Bulls game, I think, just so
they
that did. They could put
they
that
did,
in there.
Because
yeah.
They had so many people there, I think 13 or 14,000 there in Chicago. But the Spearings from Ontario did not have tickets to the event. So,
So
Mr. Spearing thought he could buy tickets from a scalper outside. somebody would
Oprah.
Be selling tickets, but not for Oprah.
So.
Indeed, not for Oprah. And that plan failed, so he tried something else, like telling police he'd been robbed of Oprah tickets, even going as far as cutting. He took a rock to his forehead and like bashed his forehead in so he could draw a little blood and with his hands, too, trying to bloody his
really
hands
went
up.
All out.
Went all out to, I know it's kind of gross, to make it look like it was an authentic crime. He finally confessed to the fake mugging, Jeremy, and he spent the night in jail.
Oh.
You go to jail. No, I'm sorry. That's bad. Spearing, by the way, said he didn't want his wife to be angry for not seeing Oprah.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to make her mad.
No. We've got some pictures, by the way, of Oprah's extravaganza and lots of pictures and a video, too. I think Tom
Any
Cruise is in the video.
Any tickets up there on the website, marketplace.org?
No, it's over, man. It's over. Right, come on. There are no tickets there. Maybe for something else. I don't know. Anyway, it's all there at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
Have a great weekend. And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.